Dean's Corner podcast. I have a special treat for you guys today. Very special friend of mine. You know, doctors always talk about, what's the advantage of being a business owner versus being an associate? Well, here's one huge advantage. Patient walks into my office 2008, and in 2023, he goes on my podcast. Point is that if you're not a business owner, you're not going to have these opportunities to have these relationships with high-end people in your community. And we have Fred Carey here, who I met as a patient of mine in 2008. And we've been friends ever since. We're going to get into it a little bit. But before we do that, watch this.
Hey, guys. I'm Fred Carey. I'm the CEO and founder of IdeaPros. People have asked me when I made my first $1 million, and that was 2 years before I lost my first $1 million. I had a company called Boxlot, which we sold for $125 million after 18 months. A company called Imagine Communications that now does about $800 million a year in revenue. Path One that was sold to Scientific Atlanta and is responsible for high definition television broadcasts all over the world. I have started 10 different companies. Three of them went public and two others got acquired by public companies. I've raised billions of dollars and we've had billions of dollars in revenue. And I decided it was time to give back. You're going to build a company and you're going to build a life that you're going to be proud of.
Mr. Fred Carey, how are you, my friend?
Well, but I think we should end it right there.
And well, we talked about the 3 seconds, you know, and everything drops off. So shit, you know, yeah. I mean, nobody's watching now.
Yeah. Well, let's see what happens.
How are you, man?
I'm doing great.
So you had somebody walk in and you started speaking some Spanish. And then the more you spoke, the worse it got, man.
Well, God, you don't understand Spanish because it was it was flawless.
I wonder how many languages people speak after 3 seconds fluently. Like, they got the first 3 seconds down, but then it all falls apart into pieces.
Yeah, well, I have about 10 different languages I can speak for 3 seconds. I have three that I can speak for a couple of paragraphs.
Well, yeah, I think I don't know if I can speak 10 languages, maybe 5 or 6, but and it doesn't all start with, you know, nice words. So there you go. Yeah. So look, Fred, man, you walk into my, let's talk about this a little bit. You walk into my office 2008. And there's been a lot of talk about this. Actually, I put a couple of posts on social media just the past week talking about, you know, what consumers want from doctors and doctors' practices, dentists. So my question to you is this: when you go to the dentist, you're a consumer, so let's just, you know, let's have kind of a sales discussion. But are you getting something from a dentist because you want it or because you need it?
Well, typically it's because you need it. And I think if I speak to the voice for a lot of consumers, that's a really tough profession because, you know, you associate pain with dentistry. Even with all of the lidocaine and everything else that you give, everybody hates needles, and that's part of the process, you know. So pain-free dentistry, I think that's the word for the future. And being able to fix cavities. Give me those things. Other than that, I'm going there because I need to. Other than when you want to have some cosmetic work done, then that's because you want to. But for the most part, it's a need to type business. And, you know, it's a really tough business. I think a great way to differentiate yourself is focusing on kind of the pain elements of it and the anticipated pain more than the real pain, because you guys get us all Novocained up and everything's good after that.
So if you don't mind, I want to just keep talking about this because I think a lot of doctors are listening. So you go in, let's say just, you're a patient, and you're going to lose all your lower teeth and all your upper teeth. Great. And the option is, the doctor says, okay, well, you can get dentures and, you know, you could be on your way, or you can get 2 implants on the bottom, you know, 4 implants on top, and we'll snap something on. You can be on your way, or you can get this best product and this best service that we have, which is you can get 6 implants on top, 6 implants on the bottom. And then we can screw it in with the dentures into the implants. And here are your 3 options. So where is the want and the need there? Meaning, is there a difference for you as a consumer that says, I can just get dentures, or I can get this amazing end product where I can kind of recapture my dentition again? That's the question for us as dentists, is when you go from the denture to the actual, the best of what dentistry has to offer, you can, you know, you don't need that. You choose to have that based on your financials or what have you. But that's the question for us, is from the traditional model to more of a progressive mindset. That's where the sales process comes in, because you're choosing to get the better product. How do you answer that as a consumer? Is it just all financial? Like, if you could do it, I want the best. Or is it something that, you know, is an upsell for you? Tell me a little bit about the consumer mindset there.
Yeah, this is one of the rare instances where I would sell the highest level product to the consumer and then shame them into the other products, you know. Shaheen, I know how important your teeth are to you, and it's terrible that we have to remove them all, but I know that you want to be able to wake up and act as if nothing happened. You don't want to be taking your teeth in and out every day. I have a great solution for that. It is costly. It's X number of dollars, but we have a program where you can pay monthly for the next 24 months. And if that doesn't work for you, if you don't care that much about it, there are 2 other things I want to go over with you, just so you know everything that is available to you. So again, that's one instance where you start with a Ferrari and end up with a Ford if you need to. But I think that's a pretty dramatic thing for a consumer to face, that they have to have all their teeth removed. And nobody really wants to have, you know, I'm going to take my teeth out at night. They want to take their girlfriend out at night. And having teeth that snap in and out every day is not a solution anybody wants. So I think if you do it right as a dentist and understand there's a sticker shock involved to it. So instead of telling me it's going to cost $80,000 to do this, maybe let me know it's $1,000 a month for, you know, the next 48 months or whatever price point. You make this $10,000 deposit, X number of dollars a month, and we can figure out what it's going to cost in the long run. But I got to tell you, even with a lot of money, some of those numbers are quite shocking, especially when I don't imagine most dental insurances cover something like that.
Yeah, and so it leads to the question of, is dentistry a sales process, or is it a need-based service? I argue that you don't need teeth. You can walk around without dentures. You can walk around without implants. It's not going to be the same quality of life. Your life expectancy might drop a few years, but you can do it. And many do. You know, it's just interesting, because you walked into my office in 2008, and, you know, we had some things that we had to address. But so today, the word entrepreneur is very sexy, right? Tell me your definition of what an entrepreneur is.
Well, you know, an entrepreneur to me is a person who's willing to take extraordinary risk for the potential of future value. It really boils down to that. And it is very sexy. It shouldn't be. It's a situation where social media has made it sexy. It's the hardest thing you're ever going to do in your life. It's a journey that never ends. Success is fleeting. The little clip that you put at the beginning of the show, I've had ups, I've had downs, I continue to have a lot of issues all the time, every day, even when things are going really great. You know, it's something that's the hardest thing that you're ever going to do. And it takes a lot of mental determination, perseverance to make it happen. You can look at all the most successful companies in the world and look at how they started. I mean, FedEx was down to their last payroll. The CEO took all the money out of the bank account, flew to Vegas, bet on black, won, got enough money to pay for jet fuel for one airplane for a week, and he managed to get funding a week later. You know, the Airbnb guys had to focus on selling political cereal to make enough money to make ends meet. They were the first real serial entrepreneurs. And almost all of them have had really terrible stories. Elon Musk and his fourth rocket launch, but he bet everything on it. He had three failures. That fourth one failed, you would have never known his name. And so the entrepreneurial journey is really, really tough. And people need to understand that before they want to take that leap. You have to have this burning desire inside.
Do you have to fail to be an entrepreneur? I mean, is that how you're respected as an entrepreneur? Is that how you're known as an entrepreneur? Is how many times you've failed? Is it just a red carpet and somebody gets lucky and never fails? And are they considered the same? You know, I'll share my experience as well, but you know, what's your definition? I mean, do you guys talk about failures when you get around all bunch of entrepreneurs, or, and if somebody says, oh, I've never failed, you're like, oh, I don't need to talk to this guy. He's not a real entrepreneur.
Think about it. You're creating something. In many cases, again, depending on what you want to do as an entrepreneur, in many cases, you're creating something that doesn't exist in its present form. So what are the odds that you're going to get it right the first time? Very, very, very low. And when we look at people that we think made it right out of the gate, like the Facebook guys, they were in college, they started this directory at Harvard, and then it spread across the country. But if you look at any interviews from him, you'll see he started like 10 companies before that. Nothing big, obviously. He had all these little incremental growth periods of things that he tried that didn't work out. And so failure is just part of the recipe towards success. You know, you're mixing up your brew. Oh, shit, that doesn't work. Let me try this other thing. Well, that doesn't work so well either. And you finally get the proper mix to really make things happen. But it's not, there's nobody, and I'm sure somebody's going to come up with some rare exception, but there's really nobody that hasn't gone through a failure process to get to a win at the end.
What do you, and we can talk about this. I mean, obviously, you know, you've gone through a lot of different companies, as stated in the outset. You've built 10 companies. What are investors looking for when they come to you? And what are you doing when you're trying to raise money? I'm curious to know. There's a certain part of, you know, and I'll just speak from experience. In 2014, when I kind of started to dabble into this entrepreneurial world, it was just, you know, waking up middle of the night multiple times every night. I still do an hour or 2 hours every night. I'm up working. You get a lot done when everybody's sleeping. But I look back and I've pivoted probably 40, 50 times over the last 10 years into different things. And each time I've grabbed something, a small piece before I let it go from something that I was doing. But I want to go back to like when I first started, it was like, what are you doing? Like, you're a licensed dentist. You should just go work as a dentist, go open up a clinic, work 5 days a week, 30, 40 hour clinical days, and just shut your mouth and come home. You don't have to explain yourself. You don't have to prove anything. You're a licensed, you're a doctor, and you've made it. And during that time, and even today, I mean, I'm laughed at. I'm probably, you know, been called so many names, some that I'm sure they would never say in my face. There's a certain level of there's a certain level of commitment, Fred, that I can, and you know, I mean, you know me better than anybody. I didn't really talk about that too much, but for those that don't know, Fred is somebody, he's my confidant. I go to him for everything. I mean, you're my mentor, you're my therapist, you're my lawyer, you're my it's been a special relationship for me. You've helped me in my deepest, darkest times. It's been a very interesting, you know, you probably laughed at some of the ideas that I came up with and you know, some of the things that I, you know, there were moments where you're like, dude, get your head on right. This is not the right path. But the point is it's so lonely. It's so lonely to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
It's so painful to be an entrepreneur. And this is why I said being an entrepreneur is sexy, because there's nothing sexy about it.
First of all, thanks for that. I'm happy to be there. But I need to ask you, the people calling you names and everything, are they using the A word?
Well, there's a lot of A words that can be used. So I don't know what A word, but, you know.
I just wanted to make sure it wasn't me, you know, because that's.
Oh, yeah.
It is a lonely ride, and it doesn't get better. You know, when I was a year and a half ago, I was working with Coldplay when they were getting ready to start their tour. And Chris Martin talking about how lonely he had been over the last year. And here's somebody, you know, and he's an entrepreneur. That, you know, if you have a band like that, you're an entrepreneur. And just being at the top, by nature, means you're by yourself. And if you can surround yourself with 2-3 people that can be your confidants, that can talk to you and help you through things, it makes it better. I say to all my entrepreneurs, in fact, we had a meeting yesterday called the boardroom for my partners who've launched their companies, from Idea Pros, find groups of entrepreneurs, you know, find even this once a month little happy hour group of people who've started their companies. Be around people that have experienced the same things you're going through, and that makes that journey a little bit better. But it is, I don't want to discourage anybody from being an entrepreneur. Just know you're getting into the prize ring. It's not like you're, you know, playing laser tag. You're going into for a prize fight, 15 rounds, and you better be able to stand up the whole time. It's not easy.
On the same side, as you said, you know, on the other side of the coin, it's such a great ride. It's such a high. And, you know, being an ex-pro athlete, I can tell you when somebody roars, when there's 15,000 people in an arena and they roar, it's a high. And yeah. Being an entrepreneur, you can have those experiences, and those highs are very addicting. In some ways, being an entrepreneur is a drug, because you're always looking for the next high, right?
Yeah.
You know, I've done some public speaking. I speak in front of 6 people, and I've spoken in front of 300 people. But each time, there is a certain level of, you know, that high that you get when you go on stage and you talk live. That live interaction with doctors and dental professionals, in my case, is just what it's all about for me. And I get the same high when I talk to small groups as I talk to large groups. But in between those highs, there's a lot of You know, those are the peaks. There's a lot of valleys, and those are the valleys that you have to grind through yourself. You can't, there is nobody who's going to do that for you, but you, you are the person that's going to be the driver in everything that you're doing. You're in full control, which has its positives, because, you know, if you're, if you believe that you control everything that's in your life, and you know, that's a whole discussion. I talk about this in length, but being in control is a very powerful aspect of being an entrepreneur. But it's also very lonely, and you lose a lot of money trying to find that success, that path to success. And you try many different things, and you're right. Many of the people that everybody sees on social media today that's successful, whatever that means, has a different definition for everyone. If you dig deep underneath, they've had very difficult times, and they probably still have very difficult times. What is one or two traits for you, Fred, that you really, you know, when coaches go and look for talent for teams, right? They're like, yeah, he's got it. What are a couple of traits for entrepreneurs where you go, this guy's going to make it?
There's a few. Number one is perseverance. I mean, you have to know that this man or woman is going to go into the fire and stay there as long as it takes to move forward. Number two is intellect. You really have to be able to embrace the subject matter that you're going into wholeheartedly, learn everything you can about it, learn everything you can about every position in your company. And the third one is integrity, that to know that you will do the right thing even when it's really the hard thing. With Idea Pros, you know, you talk about all my prior successes, and we've had some real successes with Idea Pros. In fact, we're starting to see some of our partners come out. We just had one of our companies sold for a 10x. We've had another company that had just launched their product and is talking to a major tool company that wants to brand them. So we're seeing things that are really starting to percolate now. But on the other hand, it's also really, really hard. And with Idea Pros, it's so much heavy lifting that I had to make a decision in February this year to not take any new partners till we figure this shit out and dealt with the backlog we had from existing partners. That required me to reach into my own pocket. For example, last month I put in $125,000 of my own dollars into the company, and the month before something similar. And since that day that I decided not to take new partners, I've been fueling the beast to be able to finish the job that we promised we would do. And that's a really, really hard decision. Mind you, during this process, there's some subset of clients / partners who's like, oh, you know, these guys are a fraud, or this guy took my money and didn't do anything, and meanwhile, haven't paid myself in 2 years, throwing hundreds of thousands of dollars into my company and keeping my head held high because I'm doing the right thing. That, I think, is the most important trait of a really good entrepreneur, because the future is dictated by how you address the present. And if you're doing the right things today, then your future, no matter how hard that journey is going to get better and better till you get the outcome that you want. If you don't have all those elements, you're just never going to make it.
So, you know, I think one of the key factors here is really the journey is in the understanding of being committed to something. And I can tell you, in 2014, I started as a marketing firm. Mm-hmm. In my entrepreneurial endeavors. And I soon realized after about 12, 15 months that that I'm not a marketing expert at the time, right? And people, when they give you money, they're different, right? They're not, you know, you meet people when money is exchanged. You meet their character, their integrity, their threshold for risk, their threshold for failure. you know, it's a different it's a different transaction from being friends than when money's exchanged. When money's exchanged between individuals, it's a game changer, because now you're in there every day, many times, depending on how much they've given you. But and then I look, you know, my path in 2015, 16, 17, 18, 19, and all the things that I did. And it's the word that I think is really important in this entire process is I haven't quit. I haven't quit.
Perseverance.
Yeah, I haven't quit. And it's not, it's been financially damaging. I could have made a lot more money being a dentist. But I will tell you that being a dentist doesn't have $100 million exit either. So it's an interesting balance between, should I just go make $300,000-$400,000 a year and work as a clinical dentist and, I don't know, have a net worth of $4-5 million, $6 million when I'm done, whatever those numbers add up to be. Or do I want to live something that internally makes me happy? That really is why I think my calling, what I believe my calling was for, is to be able to do what I'm doing today. It's been a great journey. It's been a painful journey. I've helped many people, which I think is very powerful. And I've had some losses along the way as well. But I want to talk a little bit right now about, you know, you talked about starting 10 companies. What is, and doctors right now, some of them want to get out of the clinic. Mm-hmm. Some of them want to create a side hustle, as they say. Some of them want to maybe be completely done with dentistry. How can somebody get started? Yes, you have to have an idea. So, you know, and this is where Idea Pros comes in, because I believe basically in a nutshell, you take that idea and you create a business from it. And there's a lot of steps in between. And you know, what's interesting, I'll tell you, like, and this is, and we've had this discussion. You know, I could have come to you and said, hey, I got this idea, and then you run with it. But the other side of it is that journey would be missed. And thickening your skin as an entrepreneur, I think, is a really important aspect of this journey as well. It's easier to give money to someone to have them develop something for you, and then you miss all the highlights and the nuts and bolts of how it was all created and built. Or you can go through the journey yourself. It takes you 7-10 years longer. It might cost you 3-4x more, but maybe you're smarter on the back end of that 7-10 years. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm going to answer that question. Then I'm going to go back to the dentist question and how they can become entrepreneurs. With this second half of what you're talking about, the journey, the knowledge that you get from that journey, that's one of the things that I recently changed with Idea Pros. Before, people would come in, they'd be a partner, they'd sit on a couch, and we'd update them every couple of weeks. And to some extent, you were not able to judge the character of the person that was your partner only by something's delayed for 3 weeks or 3 months or more months. And, you know, they can sit and complain. And there's others that will sit and say, what can I do to help? Do you need more money? Do you need my time? How can I assist? And it's only there that you're seeing the character that's necessary to become an entrepreneur and be a successful one. So in our new process, what we do is we make anybody that comes in as a co-founder, we make them their own project manager. So they're basically coloring within the lines. We know what you're supposed to be doing, but they're doing it themselves. So they're feeling the pain. They're feeling the urgency. They're feeling the ups and downs of entrepreneurship. And you're right. That is a critical part of the journey. If you don't have that experience, then you're really not going to understand what it's all about and why the rewards are so meaningful at the end when you get there. Now, as far as any dentist or other professionals or any person really that's listening and wants to take that journey and leave the kind of structured environment that they're in and go out on your own to do something that you've always dreamed about, you have to make sure that this is really something you're passionate about. You have to make sure that this is something that no matter whether you're having a good day or a bad day at it, when you wake up in the morning and you put your feet down on the side of the bed, you're likely to be smiling. You're smiling because you're doing what you're doing. And if you don't think that what your idea is going to get you there, then don't even do it, because you're giving away a lot of security, the education. I don't know what it costs to be a dentist, $500,000, I'm sure, at least in school or more. And you've worked your butt off to get to where you are. And to have that security of knowing you got the paychecks coming in, you're saving in a 401k, you're going to have a net worth at the end that's going to keep you in your retirement years. If that's what makes you happy, stick with it. But if you think of what I just said and it makes you think, oh, shit, I don't want that, then you really need to start looking at finding the thing that you're passionate about. And if you can first focus on what you're passionate about and then see, is there a way to put a business around that? That's when you're going to have the best experience. It's going to take a long time anyway, but you're going to have the best experience if you can align your purpose, your passion with what it is that you're going to be doing for your work in your life. So there is no work-life balance. It all becomes life.
Yeah. Self-awareness, I think, is a huge part of that, because to be honest, when you're, you know, a lot of these social media, you know, multimillionaires, it's difficult for me, I could say, when I was 20 years old or 25 years old, to know what I wanted to do. I mean, I was an athlete in my 20s, and I decided to be a dentist at 27 and went to dental school at 29, graduated at 33. And it was still at that time, you know, this is, internet was just starting. I mean, this is 2001 when I got licensed. There was not anything close to what there is today as far as opportunities for people to have their voice heard, have their content spread. I think Gary Vee and Hormozy, they have 250 pieces of content that comes out. I believe it's every week. And you know, you can spread the message across so many different channels and do so many things that were not possible 20, 25 years ago. So social media has really created this noise of really at scale, bringing in all these entrepreneurs that that want to have a voice. And I think that's really important to understand. But you know, self-awareness in this journey of what you're really passionate about, what you want to do the rest of your life, I think it's fair to leave room that it is okay that if you're 25 and you think you're passionate about something and at 32 it changes, that's okay. Sometimes you have to lose in order to gain. You talked about going to school, you know, doing all these, all the education. I'm still around it. I still practice dentistry. Yeah. I still, you know, I'm helping the dental profession. So it's not like I've completely erased everything that I've done. But I think the key component many times is understanding what you really want. And sometimes that doesn't come naturally. Sometimes you have to go through a journey or a process of learning more about yourself, understanding a little bit more about yourself, and developing as an individual. Emotional intelligence it doesn't come for a 23-year-old, right? You have to go through some life experiences. Life has to humble you a couple of times, whether it's the stock market, the real estate market, divorce, business partnerships that have gone south. Life will humble you. And if it hasn't humbled you yet, it's just either you're young or you've been a little bit lucky, but you'll get there. But with that said, you know, self-awareness is a huge component in all of this. And I think that's something that people have to understand and leave room for, that maybe you don't have the answer today, because a lot of people are on the sidelines. Like, I think I'm passionate about it, but I'm not really sure. I kind of like doing this other thing. And, you know, you start questioning yourself as far as what you're really passionate about. And then it's analysis paralysis, and you're still on the sidelines 3 years later. So I think it's important to what you're saying. I agree 100%. But you also have to get in the game and learn more about yourself as you get in the game.
Yeah. And self-awareness is one of the things that is really fleeting. If you think about it, the chances are that all the people closest to you know you better than you know yourself. Because what we do, and here's a good exercise, what we do is we excuse behaviors that are not up to our standard or up to our par. We're always late at meetings. We told somebody we're going to call them back and we didn't. We promised we'd help with something and we didn't help. And we look at those things as kind of aberrations that are not really what we're all about. But everybody around us sees those things as a central element of the character of who we really are. So if the first step in self-awareness is accepting your flaws and recognizing that's part of the character that you have, that way you can start working on them. If you continue to excuse those behaviors, then you're going to be more and more isolated from the person that you really are, while everybody around you has this different impression of you than you have of yourself. So,
I will tell you, Fred, that I think everybody needs to kind of look at themselves right now. And when somebody's having a conversation with them and is saying something to them, just ask yourself in general, do you come back with yes, but, or do you come back with yes, and? And I think that right there is a huge part of being an entrepreneur. I believe most entrepreneurs are the yes and group, because they're always going to take an idea or they're always going to take a thought and expand and grow on it and build on it. When you're the person that's the yes, but, you're always going to be that person that's going to doubt and question everything that's being told to you. And that doubt and that questioning within your operating system slows you down and makes you a little bit more of a W-2, right? Versus an independent contractor, so to speak.
Yeah. The but word, it completely negates everything you said before it. So when you're trying to have a dialogue with somebody that's important to you, whether it's business, personal relationships, and you start throwing that but in, that truly indicates that you didn't really agree with anything that they said, and you're going to acknowledge it, but then you're going to go on your own journey. So that's probably one of the worst words in English.
And also in relationships, right? Because you have to have the ability to apologize and you have to have the ability to listen. Yep. And apologizing is humbling. And listening is absorbing.
Yeah.
And absorption can be very defensive in nature because you want to push back.
Yep.
And I can tell you, in my relationship, even in this last year, I've learned to absorb, and I've learned to have that ability to listen and to apologize.
Let me tell you something about apologies. Heartfelt apology, I know they're very difficult, but they're incredibly empowering. To be able to sit with somebody and admit that you did something wrong or you didn't follow through or that your behavior could have made somebody feel a certain way, even though that wasn't your intention. A really heartfelt apology with no but gives you so much power. Number one, it helps you on the self-awareness side of things. And number two, it really takes all the wind out of the sail of dispute that you're having with that person. It's very, very empowering. And it says to the other person, your voice is heard. Your voice matters to me. What I did, and hold it inside, I didn't really mean to do that. Hold that inside of you. What I did, I can see really hurt you or upset you or put you in an awkward position or whatever it is. And I apologize for that. But this is a learning experience for me. I'm not going to let that happen again. That's really, really powerful. It shows that you're above the fray and that you are going to try to always do the right thing. If you can make that part of your habit, it ends up becoming part of your character. And when it does, the road ahead is going to be really a lot smoother than otherwise.
Well, and words are powerful, but action is even more powerful, right? So, you know, it's easy to use words and say words, but you really have to stand by that. And I've gone through that on a personal level and also on the business side as well. I will also say this, I think as an entrepreneur, Fred, sometimes it's okay to press restart. It's okay to press restart. There's nothing wrong with going in a certain direction and realizing that, yeah, there's a dead end there. Now, at that dead end, you have a choice to say, fuck it, I'm just going to go back, in this case, just be a dentist. Or you can press restart button and start on another path, knowing what you've known that got you to that dead end. And I think that's also important as well. There's got to be points where you identify when something is not working out, and or identify when a new direction is going to create new momentum for you. And I think momentum is a very important word in entrepreneurship as well, as we're always looking for momentum. We're always looking for relationships. The word access, how important is networking and access in entrepreneurship for you, Fred?
Well, you talked about earlier at the beginning here about how I've been somebody you could rely on and a mentor of sorts for you. And I think being able to get, and I've been terrible with this. I'm just starting to change, but get out there in your environment, make connections, find people that are in your similar situation. They're trying to do something different with their life. Just establishing those types of relationships with people who are similar to you in what you're trying to accomplish is extraordinarily powerful. I mean, you to have a Rolodex that you can pick up the phone and rely upon with whatever thing you want to do next or whatever issue you happen to have today is again, empowering, just like apologies are, because now you're building up an infrastructure that's going to support you in those real times of need. And by the way, as you grow, as you become wiser, as you've had more and more experiences, you can impart that knowledge the other way too. It's a two-way street.
Are you, you know, when you, the word vulnerable comes to mind right now. And I believe in networking and in access, in relationship building, you have to be vulnerable. And you have to be able to have communication, uncomfortable discussions with people that you're starting to meet and connecting with in your line of work. And exposing your downfalls, exposing your weaknesses, exposing your liabilities, exposing your mistakes. Sometimes that opens more doors than you would believe, because the person that you're talking to respects the fact that there's a man in front of them not only talking about their success stories and all the great things that they've done in their life. Yes, I've done some great things in my life. Being a pro athlete was not easy. Getting a DMD, becoming a doctor was not easy. Migrating into the U.S. in 1970, immigrating into the U.S. in 1978 for my dad was not easy. As a family, was not easy moving into Utah in an area where you know, there was a lot of hatred at the time. I was young, but I saw what my uncles went through in college during the Iran hostage crisis. And so I've gone through you know, periods of success and hardship, and still do today. But I think being vulnerable in this access and this networking community, it's not something that even when I go on stage and I talk many times about the areas that I failed in, things that I've learned through my failures as a dentist. Being vulnerable is not easy for a doctor because we're so smart and we're so great and we're so wonderful. And we have the shield that, you know, we're just smarter than you. We know more than you. Some of us anyway. So that ego, like I said earlier, is something that life will eventually humble you. And it's certainly humbled me on 2-3 different occasions throughout the 22 years of being a licensed dentist. What's next for you, Fred? What's going on with you and Idea Pros? I know we, on the promotional video, we stated that you are the CEO of Idea Pros. Tell us a little bit about Idea Pros, why you came up with the idea of Idea Pros, and what the purpose is.
Yeah, so there's several things going on. Like I said, the beginning of the year, we stopped taking new partners. I really needed to, as you point out, restart. Like, what am I doing? Because I knew I could get from 400 partners to maybe 1,000 partners, but that's it. I mean, we're already straining at the seams with what we're trying to do. So how do I reinvent Idea Pros and make it something that can help more people? And that was the reason I started Idea Pros in the first place, to help entrepreneurs. 95% of entrepreneurs in the U.S. are what we call outsiders. They're not going to get venture capital. They don't have access to accelerators. They don't know how to play the finance game. They don't know what to build going from idea to nationwide launch. So how can I help more and more of those people? And so with the restart of Idea Pros, if you go to ideapros.com right now, the very first thing you're going to see is free membership. And in that membership, we give you stuff every single week on what you need to learn about to be an entrepreneur, how to grow a business, everything for free. And then you can work your way up the food chain if you need help from us. We have all sorts of smaller packages we put in place so that anybody, no matter what they think they can afford or no matter where they are on their journey, they can go forward and have somebody who will act as their co-founder. Think of them as well as thinking of themselves. So that's part of what's going on. To enable that journey, for the very first time, I also am out of raising capital at ideaprosinvest.com. We're doing what's called a 506c, where we're raising money from accredited investors, and we're using that to fuel the next generation of growth for Idea Pros. There's an opportunity here for us to do a couple of mergers, and really, my ultimate goal is find a way to become the Amazon for entrepreneurs. Like, if you have an idea and you need help, it's the first thing you're going to go to, you know. And on Amazon, I buy everything from eye drops to toilet paper to food to electronics. Literally, when I feel I need something here in the house, I think about them first. That's where I want to bring Idea Pros, so that if you're an entrepreneur, you know there are all these resources available for you, free and paid, that are going to help you on that journey and turn you as an outsider into an insider. I got that going for me, and I recently promised my kids I'm going to retire by the time I hit 90. So,
well, actually, this is what I was going to ask you. How many years have you been an entrepreneur, Fred?
Well, I really started at 20. Yeah, so 50 years.
Yeah. Has it been worth it for you?
It's the only thing I know how to do. I've always felt like an outsider. I never felt like I could work in a corporate environment. Reporting to somebody else lost its luster at a very early age for me. So I've always wanted to do something. And if you look at my history, it's, in a sense, looking at it from the outside, it's kind of schizophrenic. But the reality is that with every company I started, and this is what I recommend for everyone, I looked for a market that was robust, that was growing, that had competitors, but also had a big hole in the market that wasn't being filled. And that's why I've been in entertainment and food and software, hardware, e-commerce, banking. I've been all over the place. But if you look underneath the covers, you'll see every one of those places I went to is a place that had a real opportunity in it that I exploited. So how do I line that with my passion? Helping others. And if my passion is helping others, then I can be in a lot of different industries and make a difference, because I'm trying to enable, empower other people to do better in their lives, which helps me in my own.
You've known me for 15 years. What advice do you have for me?
Keep evolving, and you know, don't take that easy path. I think you're amazing, and I'd love to be sitting on the sidelines and sometimes in the trenches and on your journey so far. And I think you're doing the right thing. You're doing what you're passionate about. You are constantly growing, and I think that's a good journey for you. You're doubling down on your personal life too, your family, your kids, your beautiful kids. I think that's really important. You know, as we grow and grow in our entrepreneurial journeys, we seem to have less and less time for the people that matter the most. And remember that they are part of your journey as well. Maybe they're even one of the main reasons for your journey. So all of us think about that when we're out waking up at 3 a.m. to figure out what to do next, or how I messed this thing up and what am I going to do to fix it. When you're thinking about those things, realize that the people around you that really love you need that same detail and same attention. And I would say, treat your personal life like an entrepreneur. You know, as entrepreneurs, we never give up, right? With your personal life, never give up. When you're an entrepreneur, something's not working out, you pivot, you try a different approach. Your personal life, do the same thing. And if you can take that power of entrepreneurship and make it part of everything you do, then you're going to continue on your journey. And I can't wait to sit there with you and watch this thing continue.
Well, let me add one more thing to that. During this past couple of years, I've come to you a lot, and I want to thank you. It's been special that you've always been there for me. I call you at 5 a.m, you answer. I call you at sometimes at midnight, you answer. Do you ever fucking sleep, man? Like, what the hell? Are you like me? You don't sleep or what? But yeah. here's what I want to ask you, because I've always been curious. Like, have I come up with any idea that you've liked? Like, is there, I mean, I've probably given you like, I don't know, what, over 100 different ideas that I've come up with over the last 15 years. Any of them that you liked? I mean, well, I'm being a little sarcastic here, but.
No, I love the whole Love Bites thing, which I happen to have named. And I think there's a lot more you can do with that one. I'd love to talk to you more about that. I'd see the dentistry of the future there. And I think you've already been working on that, you know, turnkey, small operation, low overhead, great customer patient service. I think there's a real need for that. And I thought that was a really good idea. The fact that you're going out and doing training and helping teach dentists how to actually be business people so that they understand what a bottom line is and what cash flow means. I think I really, really enjoyed that as well.
Well, in that conversation, we also talked about something else that that somebody can take on right now is this idea of preventive dentistry.
Yeah.
You basically create a membership model, and for example, I mean, we'll just throw a random number, but let's say, you know, $99 a month, and you can come to the practice and get your cleanings and get your x-rays and have your preventive care done. This is one thing that's really missing in our profession, and is education. And the people understanding that if you brush twice a day, if you flossed every single day, and if you had fairly decent diet and nutrition, kept everything in moderation, you can live a cavity-free life. And this is one of the things that can happen at the eight, at, as a pediatric in the pediatric arena. It can happen as an adolescent if you see a lot of teenagers, and obviously as adults as well. And it could be generational because the adult parents can educate their kids, and it can continue to go on. But preventive dentistry is the least expensive form of dental care. And the best form, if you're scared of needles, if you're scared of the dentist and the handpiece and the noise and the smell and, you know, the sounds and all of those things, preventive dentistry is the wave of the future. We had that conversation as well.
Yeah, I believe that as well, as other types of medicine as well. But flossing's a hard one. You might want to invent something.
You just don't have like tactical skills, man. You can't just be, if you can't play with the floss, come on. By the way, every time Fred walks in with like these toothpick brushes and he's like always like, is this a floss? I'm like, no, dude, it's not a fucking floss. Stop being lazy. Yeah.
So, well, I think the last time I saw you, you said, well, hey, Fred, when was the last time you flossed? And I said, Shaheen, don't you remember? You were there.
So preventive dentistry is huge. And I think there's that wellness and prevention is a big market as well. Fred, man, listen, this was special for me. I know we've been talking about doing this for a while, and I appreciate you coming on. If you had any positive advice for somebody that's in a hard time right now, that's looking to either raise money or that's kind of stuck, that really wants to continue to be an entrepreneur, have a 50-year entrepreneurial career because that's who they are, that's what they want to do, but they're stuck. They don't know what to do, what direction to go to. They're out of ideas. What do you recommend?
I've recently gone through this myself because, as I said, we stopped taking partners, a lot of financial strain, subset of partners yelling, arguing, wanting refunds, things like that. And to work through those types of bad experiences, the most powerful tool you can have is acceptance. It really is. If you can, because we sit there, we worry every night, what's going to happen? What if this happens? What if that happens? Why don't you take what if this happens and face that as a reality? The worst thing that can happen is this, and be comfortable with whatever that is. And so now you don't become complacent. You have acceptance that I'm going to try everything I can possibly do. And the worst case scenario is this thing. And I'm going to accept that as my worst case scenario and be okay with it, because I know if I have to end up there, I'm going to be able to get out of it. If Elon Musk's fourth rocket failed and he lost everything, we'd still probably hear about him today because he'd find some other way to restart and build it up. So acceptance, whatever hard thing you're going through, accept it, accept the consequence of whatever the worst thing is that can happen. And that's going to give you a clear road to start doing the positive things that you need to take you along your journey and find the solution that's waiting there for you as soon as you get all that doubt out of the way.
Fred Carey, CEO of Idea Pros, a friend, a confidant, mentor. Thank you for your time today. I hope you have a great rest of your day. And I'll probably just call you after this podcast and give you another one of my ideas that I think is going to be great and that you got to listen to.
Okay. Well, I had a family and it was great. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, you're welcome, buddy. You're welcome, buddy. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, that was special for me. I want to thank all of you for being here for our podcast. We're really excited. I would like you to subscribe to Shaheen's Corner podcast on YouTube. Follow me at Dr. Shaheen Safarian on the social channels, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. We're putting a lot of content out. We want to help. It's all free. We want to build relationships with our community of professionals. And if you have somebody that you think is going to be an excellent guest, we have a list of people that want to come on, and we're deciphering through them. But if you know someone that could be a special guest for what we want to do, please let me know. Just shoot me a message on one of those social channels. I'd appreciate it. I'm Dr. Shaheen Safarian, and thanks for joining me on another episode.